Welcome everyone to the Pop Culture Podcast by Fantastic Geek. My name is Matt, and joining me as always is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Geek Shmish. Today of Fantastic Geek, a talk a Borat subsequent movie film, delivery of prodigious bribe to American regime for make benefit once glorious nation of Kazakhstan. Jinqui.
Pete, this the mostly surprise release of the 14 years in the making sequel to the first Borat film. This, of course, released on Prime Video. And I say surprise because one or two instances of the filming of this kind of leaked out. And with the first time, nobody knew exactly what was going on. And the second one, somebody put on Twitter, Sacha Baron Cohen driving a truck as Borat. And people were like, I guess this is a thing. But then it took the actual announcement of this, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago to be like, oh, it is a movie. Oh, it's here.
3 weeks ago, and you know, we've talked off mic already. Given how little film has actually made it out in this cycle, obviously given the pandemic, that with this movie, it began life as one thing, and you know, now that Matt has seen it, I held back in our discussion before, you know, that the narrative of this movie has been shaped by events that happened as they were filming, namely the coronavirus. And to be able to tip into that as the thrust of the resolution, on top of the very real world news of America's former mayor, Rudy Giuliani, and the gaffe there captured on video. I mean, whether you believe he was tucking in his pants after removing a mic or something more nefarious, Sacha Baron Cohen, I think, is right to say, hey, here it is. You look at it, you decide. But, you know, I go back to the Ali G show on HBO. I own all those DVDs. You know, by the time Borat exploded in 2006, I mean, who thought we'd ever get a sequel? This has been a repeated pattern with Sacha Baron Cohen that he's needed to retire characters, obviously, because people know to look for them. And again, to lean into that in this film, that Borat can't be Borat because people know Borat. You know, the gag in the Halloween store, you know, foreign correspondent reporter outfit, and it doesn't look like him, of course, but the brilliance of his ability. I mean, we're talking about a millennial age Peter Sellers in terms of satire, and to you know, master improv in the real world in character, to now pass the torch with I think really somebody you're going to watch explode in subsequent weeks, years, okay, in Maria Bakalova, who does a tremendous job as his daughter, as Tutar. Yeah, I mean, this exploded on our radar. We knew about the situation where he went to Portland, and there's an 8-minute clip that surfaces in August of him, you know, singing the song about, you know, do we inject them with the Wuhan flu or do we chop their heads off like the Saudis do? And, you know, that 3%ers, that white nationalists were at that rally and they're singing along with the song. You know, what he does so well, what he's always done so well, is that his humor reveals his subjects for what they are, for better or worse.
And I think that it was interesting to watch this movie kind of knowing how the first one worked. And obviously, as you said, Pete, this style predated the first Borat movie in 2006 on the Ali G show and some of the subsequent works there. But as you also said, you know, this character and Sacha Baron Cohen's style exploded in 2006. So I think that there's a little bit of a built-in house deficit, if you will, in terms of watching this movie when you kind of know, you know how that works. And I think also since 2006, to have people be so casually racist, sexist, transphobic, anti-Semitic, et cetera, up and down the list. Unfortunately, it's a little less funny because there's more of them out front than you thought.
And that's the perfect vehicle for a return of Borat.
Yeah, and in fact, it's funny. Looking here on the Wikipedia page for the movie and going to some of the links from there. Pete, let me take you back to a February 27th, 2020 news article, which, first of all, I look at that and I go, okay, that was still when things were normal, even though we knew things were about to not be normal. But the headline is Trump impersonator interrupts Vice President Mike Pence's CPAC speech. The person is referred to as a person. There's a picture there, a protester. He's labeled in the picture as a protester. References. I mean, this whole article is just kind of, it's noting this weird thing. But I mean, it doesn't get much more hidden in plain sight than all these reporters. None of them picked up on the idea that underneath that very well done makeup, that was Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah, and doing what he's always done, but at the same time, changing the game to fit the times. You know, Borat, Bruno, Ali G before Borat. He had to retire them. And, you know, then obviously the other films he's made and the other success he's gone on to. And, you know, one of the things that's really unheralded about the guy is his ability to sing, apart from the fact of his tremendous intelligence. But again, back to that revealing nature of his humor, you know, that the dialogue, the Kazaki dialogue is a mix of both Israeli and Polish to, you know, make anti-Semitic or, you know, xenophobic remarks to get people to reveal their bias. And, you know, the passing of the torch here to the daughter, you know, this, you know, not just the road picture that the original was, but maintains the buddy feeling. You know, you've got the pair and then also the coming of age story. And, you know, that she carries this movie for chunks at a time, essentially with the same shtick, but being able to do it obviously as a young woman, as opposed to the limited access that Sacha Baron Cohen has. I mean, he's not getting anywhere near Giuliani without her.
Yeah, it is interesting to reflect too on this idea of his career. You know, I don't know to what degree in the, you know, the Ali G to Borat movie kind of phase of things, I don't know to what degree he was conscious of an upward ascendancy, or if this was just, hey, working into getting your way into the entertainment business by way of, you know, BBC, then HBO, you know, Oscar nominated for the script for Borat in 2006. I think then you could say, like, he never, Bruno, I feel like was, certainly financially, was a step down from Borat, ditto with The Dictator. And then his supporting roles that he's had in these 14 years, which still is just astonishing. I said it to my wife, like, we saw the first Borat together in the movies, and they're saying it's 14 years ago. I can't believe any of this. But to just kind of, to see this career where it's, you know, he's in Les Miserables, he's in small role in Anchorman 2, he's in the Alice Through the Looking Glass, but kind of nothing that has quite exploded.
Sweeney Todd. Sings in Sweeney Todd. I mean, at one point, Matt, we forget, he was Freddie Mercury for the Bohemian Rhapsody film.
Yeah.
And obviously that changed. And as much as I wanted him in that role, I don't know if that was ultimately the right fit. And obviously he's in the Chicago 7 right now, which I've not had an opportunity to check out, but is high on my radar. I mean, this is a guy who's probably looking at an acting nomination. And, you know, again, our discussion prior to this podcast, Borat, the original, was an adapted screenplay Oscar nominee. I think you're looking at that for this film, given the amount of rewriting of improv to fit current events. And again, you know, you've got a shrunken, you know, field in terms of everything that's gone on.
Well, Pete, just for your reference, I must admit, I know what the Oscar limitations are for number of producers that can be nominated for Best Picture. The answer is 3 total or 6. Pardon me, 3 individuals or 6 total if people work as pairs. Borat's subsequent movie film has a writing credit for story by Sacha Baron Cohen, Anthony Hines, Nina Pedrad, and Dan Swimmer, and then screenplay by Peter Bainham, Sacha Baron Cohen, Jenna Friedman, Anthony Hines, Lee Kern, Dan Mazur, Erica Rivenjola, and Dan Swimmer. So, oh my goodness, Pete, I have never seen so many different names on a story. It might tax what the WGA allows in terms of nominatable, but you might be right that they're all headed towards getting their name on an envelope.
Yeah, and, you know, as far as notoriety for Amazon Prime, I mean, this, I can't think of a bigger release they've had than this, and the number of people checking it out. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, Netflix notoriously secret with their numbers, and then when they give you numbers like Bird Box and, you know, an Adam Sandler comedy, and you're just like, wait, if this was a $10 to $15 ticket, it would have made $600 million. There's no way in a weekend. It's going to be interesting to see what Amazon acknowledges from this weekend of dropping it. Apart from the fact too, Matt, that they dropped it during the debate on Thursday night. It was streaming during the debate.
Well, and I think, look, while overall I think our analysis of the movie is politics free, I think we can acknowledge real world things going on. There is one reason in my mind, there's one reason why Amazon, why this is on Amazon and not some of the other streaming services. And it is one reason. It is Amazon employee number one, Jeff Bezos, who has been, shall we say, Pete, has had a contentious relationship with the current administration.
You know, when you own the Washington Post and, you know, the charges levied at them by Donald Trump. I'm sorry, McDonald Trump. Just another great flourish of what Borat does in this movie. Yeah, I mean, where it streams matters, and the amount of people that have access to it, I mean, clearly, you know, 1, 2, 3, Netflix, Amazon, Disney Plus. I don't think I was going to Disney Plus, Matt. I mean, the debutante ball scene alone.
Yeah, in fact, I'm seeing here Baron Cohen presented the movie to several distributors who were not willing to release it due to its political content. I mean, look, clearly
that's a loss for Netflix, because I think they would have owned the weekend in the way that Amazon has. I mean, everybody's talking about this. And then when you look on social media, the clowns who are like, it wasn't as good as the first one, it was too political. Because in the first one, where, you know, Borat goes to a rodeo and before the national anthem says that he supports our war on terror, and may our war of terror, and may George W. Bush drink the blood of every man, woman, and child in Iraq and Afghanistan. So, like, what part of it was always political? It's kind of like the Star Trek discussions that we're running into with these clowns lately.
Right. I would say, I mean, was the first one kind of Washington, D.C. political? Maybe less than this one. But probably those people saying the first one wasn't funny, it's because they were laughing with Borat's sexism, xenophobia, anti-Semitism, etc., not laughing at it, which is meant to, you know, I mean, I remember I saw the first movie in theaters at least twice. And I think it was actually in the first viewing where I felt glad to be seeing it in an empty movie theater because you could. In my mind, I knew I was.
The show?
What's that?
Had you watched the show?
No. I think I was vaguely.
So your first exposure to him was in the show. I mean, I remember at the time of the movie, there was some slight criticism that, all right, you repeated a lot of the bits of the show. And that's understandable. But again, the broadening of the audience through the film release, as opposed to, okay, you've seen the show. I mean, the show was a modest hit for HBO. They did 2 seasons. And actually, it had aired first in the UK, and then they brought it over, and then they did some more for it in terms of adding. But those three key characters, to Ali G, calling him Da Ali G, Ali G, Borat, and then Bruno, all getting their own films. I mean, again, Da Ali G film is the worst of the three, and I say that as an enormous fan, and the most scripted of the three. And, you know, the improv, the, you know, guerrilla comedy of Borat and Bruno that he's able to do, that he's able to get away with, you know, really sets it apart. But yeah, you know, a lot of people back, I mean, you go back to the scene running through the hotel where, you know, him and his producer Azamat are naked through a ballroom, you know, and the shock value and the hilarity there.
Well, for this movie, I just think, I mean, what daring to go out there. And I let me back up and say, yes, it's daring. I do have to wonder again, kind of, to me, there's a slightly sad creative arc. You know, I think of Sherlock Holmes and how the author, you know, retired the character and said, that's it, I want to be more than this. And then, you know, 10, 12 years later had to come back to it. You know, I think of William Shatner saying, you know, the number of times William Shatner has played Kirk for the final time and made peace with it. And now has come back around to, you know, it's not get a life. It's, hey, everybody, pay to meet me. This is great. Come see me do my 1 hour shtick, as we did this time last year. Come see me do my 1 hour shtick on, you know, on my Star Trek experience, my life and my horses. And, you know, it's kind of rejuvenated him. But nonetheless, once I think they committed to making this, to kind of go out there, I mean, it's, no one knew when he was first going out, you know, at the end of 2019, and then, you know, into the January, February. I mean, Pete, I think we were all equally ignorant to what coronavirus was going to do to this planet. And for them to be out there, and as you pointed out, to be tweaking this movie and changing to be as timely as you could possibly imagine, it's just really astonishing.
I mean, the film gives you the steering that you need, you know, the flashbacks of the coughs that, okay, we're putting it all together now. I mean, obviously the tacked on, and I say that not pejoratively, but, you know, just practically, scene where the premiere of Kazakhstan is, you know, oh, we're going to get them back for laughing at us 14 years ago. We're going to infect them with this virus and, you know, making Borat patient zero, and obviously his traveling around the world and everything like that. I mean, the only thing I can think of better is if they tried to in some way pin it on the daughter, you know, eating of the monkey, you know, anything like that, or surprising that they didn't try to bring it back to the monkey mirroring the whole AIDS epidemic.
Maybe, and I can't believe I'm about to say this for a Borat movie, but maybe in not taking that path, they were showing some restraint.
That's possible too. I mean, the guy, he is thoughtful about how far he will take it. And, you know, there was a big piece in the New York Times that Maureen Dowd had done with him, and he is so loath to speak to people as himself. I mean, he was on Kimmel this week as Borat, and Bakalova was with him, and you know, it was making fun of Jimmy Kimmel and, you know, trying to use a stick with a thermometer at the end to take his temperature and you know, asking him questions, has he come in contact with Jewish people? And, you know, Kimmel's like, well, all of our writers and none of our cameramen. And obviously, I'm sure there was some passing of, all right, he's going to ask you this and he's going to ask you to do that, right down to, you know, trying to switch pants with him because the daughter wanted Jimmy Kimmel's pants. But yeah, there is that restraint. There's knowing where the line is, except in the scenes with people like Rudy Giuliani, who push the line on their own.
Right, right. And just to finish kind of the monkey thought there, I must confess, Pete, with the craziness of the world, I have lost track of the science-based portion of this following discussion. But I know that an early theory last spring was, you know, some of these exotic meat markets
that
the COVID had kind of jumped the species line. To me, it's a kind of immaterial topic ultimately, because it got here and we need to deal with it. And historically speaking, scientifically speaking, this is how viruses work. They jump from one species to the next, and hence it's a pandemic, you know, blah, blah, blah. I think that maybe the notion of non-Western people eating weirdo stuff, I think that that's probably been jazzed up for xenophobic reasons. Hence, I think why maybe, yes, this movie, it's an open goal. It's right there to say, oh, the monkey ended up being a thing. It might have even been initially shot that way because, like, haha, it's a funny thing that's in the news in February. Hey, apparently some Apple stores in China have been closed for like a month. Wow, must be really bad, you know. Then we figure out what's what. And to go the route of, no, this was spread by a complete buffoon, that's funny because it's not true, you know. It's not some weird science species jumping thing that's historic and scary. It's he's a moron who did a kind of dumb thing or had to travel by boat, you know. But it's kind of like it's so explainable that it's laughable.
Yeah, and that's where I think they're wise to repeat the beats of the original, but obviously update for the time, you know, that he gets a cell phone, whereas the iPhone was not a thing in 2006. Wow. And the gag that comes deliciously back around that, you know, he's got the guy from the cell phone store that's on the other end of the FaceTime when he's blackmailing the Kazakhstan premier, or the fax machine guy at, you know, how there is in this country, Matt, a real place called PMS fax center. And how he was able to find it and do all that and the facts back and forth and everything there, you know.
And by the way, that scene shot on my birthday. You could see it on the facts. And also, side note, I think the number that was being faxed from was in the same area code as to where it was being faxed to. I just mentioned that because the area code made it on screen. I think ultimately the fact that the guy writing down whatever, a la, you know, Cake Lady and others that are just, I think to me, that's the area where maybe the jokes fly the least. It was shocking in 2006 that some people were so casually phobic, you know, insert your prefix, you know, but phobic of things. And to kind of see it now where, like, it's quietly confirming, not disappointing, that Cake Lady is able to put an anti-Semitic thing on a cake without any notion of, sir, that we just don't write that sort of thing here.
Right. I mean, after, but what is he doing? He's repeating what they said in Charlottesville. And 2 years later, this woman in Texas is writing it on a cake without a second thought.
Right. I guess what I'm saying is the satire is razor sharp, and the satire is calling attention to you know, a failure of human compassion. In 2006, it called attention to all those things, and it was funny because you were like, there's still people like that. Whereas now, like I said, it's kind of like the one thing that this movie can't go faster than is the disappointing age that we live in, you know? Whereas I think even though kind of political landscape in 2006, it in terms of red state and blue state and who's in the White House and or which party's in charge of the White House and in charge of Congress and whatnot, it wasn't vastly different. It's seismically different since then.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not as if he hasn't been out there doing this stuff recently. I've been trying to get Matt to watch Who Is America, where he had to create all new characters to be able to do this stuff. And again, wound up in the news. I mean, his one character is an ex-Mossad anti-terror officer and, you know, instructor, and he got a Georgia state legislator to resign, basically, on the behavior that he was able to elicit from him about, you know, immigrants and about ethnic groups. And his best character, in my opinion, on that show is a Danish YouTuber. I mean, he got Joe Arpaio, he got Sheriff Joe to talk about Donald Trump and urine. And then there was a gun skit. Basically, they made a public service program for children. Actually, it was a line called Gunimals. It was just laugh out loud, funny stuff. I mean, he's as current and edgy as ever, but to return to Borat and then through Tutar to be able to do this stuff. I mean, to go to a debutante ball. I mean, the reaction of the one daughter debutante when Borat is talking to the father and then the daughter's like, stop it, you're disgusting. Like, there are people even within these groups that were thinking, you know, they act in a way that is contrary to our standards that still get it. Like, no, you don't do that.
And the double irony there of she's disgusted by her old-fashioned father while they're at the debutante ball. And
right.
And, you know, Pete, I didn't know that debutante balls still existed. Maybe
they're still strangely a thing. Again, you know, you want to have traditions, that's fine, so long as we're doing them in the right way. And that's where, you know, putting on the show that they did, obviously horrifying those people to what they present, but at the same time, you know, I didn't see a whole lot of people of color at the debutante ball. I didn't see, they didn't show us any Confederate flags. You know, to me, it was hitting the beat of the original film where they go to the genteel Southern supper and he returns with a bag of poop.
Yeah, which is funny because the first movie, just side-splittingly hilarious. I'm not a fan of the, I don't know, make people in their own lane look silly. Like, I think also in the first one, when he destroys the antique shop, like...
Oh, my God.
You know, like, don't get me wrong, it's totally funny. To me, it's just, it's always a little cringeworthy. Now, look, if they're doing something worth sending them up for, a la Cake Lady, a la, suntan lady or spray tan, whatever it is, in this movie, fine. I mean, to me, it's just, yeah, I don't know, I had some of those moments too, but it was in the sequel as well as in the first one, so if they're going to keep that consistent, so be it.
I mean, the heart of this film is when he believes he's been led to believe the Holocaust was a hoax, something that there are people out there who espouse. I mean, geez, Matt, late in his life, Elie Wiesel was assaulted by a Holocaust denier. punched in the face in a San Francisco elevator. You just the horror and the unbelievable nature of that. And again, how they flip it on its ear that he goes to a synagogue and that a Holocaust survivor convinces him it's real. Obviously, in character, the glee is that, you know, everything I stand for has not been ripped away. It's not, you know, this loss of national pride that Kazakhstan has. But that the heart of it is this little old Jewish lady, you know, embracing him despite the fact that he comes in wearing, you know, depictions of the worst type of stereotypes about Jewish people. And the acceptance of it. And that, I think, is where we get the joke, and that it again reveals the subjects. He doesn't make fun of her. He's making fun of the people who don't believe this stuff, as the character, obviously, the way he can in his limited understanding, finds out, you know, of the truth.
It's interesting to reflect, too. In 2006, no, I had not seen the spinoff show that had him, but the lead up to the movie where Baron Cohen in character would go anywhere and everywhere, not just, you know, on your Jimmy Kimmels and your Lettermans and whatnot. But I remember, I think it was shown live. I remember him, he called a press conference outside the Kazakhstan consulate in Washington, D.C. Obviously, people, as soon as it was clear it was Borat, or it was, you know, Borat will speak on such and such, you know, every reporter who showed up was in on the joke, but it was covered, I think it was covered live on CNN. He then walked to the White House, you know, not surprising that the consulate is within walking distance of the White House, went there, stopped at the gate saying he's there to talk to, you know, War Premier Bush, and so forth, and, you know, being turned away by the first of many layers of Secret Service security. But so there was that experience as a lead up to the movie. I see here, Pete, I guess I'm just not on the cool social media sites. Apparently, he's been on social media as Borat on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter.
Yes.
Questionable TikTok, Pete. And things like that. It's just, and also on Twitch playing video games and whatnot. It's just interesting that in this age where we are still impacted in terms of social congregation and whatnot, that he doesn't even need that. He doesn't need to call a faux press conference and for it to be carried live on news channels where, you know, the anchor is back, you know, in on the laugh and whatnot. No, just have your Borat Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and Twitch, and that's how you can get out there nowadays to put butts in seats that aren't actual seats. It's just the Amazon Prime click.
2 years ago, when the run-up, and it was very sudden, and suddenly there's, oh, he has a show on Showtime. And no one had known about it. Next to no one had known about it. But how did it come about? Well, he had a sit-down with Sarah Palin. That never makes the show. And at the end, if I'm remembering correctly, he thanks her just in, you know, the credits, because her crowing about it as a hit job was the best advertisement that he could have for the show. And, you know, Showtime has said, hey, door is open, we'd love to see more. But people already know to keep an eye out for Colonel Iran Marad and, you know, all these other characters that he's developed. You know, he had another one who's a you know, gender neutral professor who was biking cross country in the wake of Hillary Clinton's loss to try to make sense of the world. And, you know, again, the sending up of people, of stereotypes, of behavior, what he does best. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. I don't know if you can revisit Bruno. I think that character, you know, given LGBTQ acceptance and laws now, makes it a harder sell. But given the way the nonsense, Matt, particularly in this country, the xenophobia, the out and out white nationalist stuff. I mean, you know, there's a clip in the film. You see a guy with a 3% flag. I mean, you know, it's one thing to have, you know, the political flags, but, you know, I think we can all agree, regardless of what side of the aisle you're on, that's wrong. And then, you know, that we're still not condemning white supremacy in 2020 that, you know, just barely scratched the surface of the 2006 film.
And I think that's the we not condemning it. It's we exclusive of us. You know, it's not the literal you and I we. It's the, you know, the larger, some of the larger cultural problems there. You mentioning some of his characters, it does cross my mind, you know, Ali G, Borat, and Bruno, all conceived, you know, over 20 years ago, or in the neighborhood of 20 years ago. I do wonder what's next for Sacha Baron Cohen. I mean, is it maybe just the him as himself sit down kind of, you know, classic kind of PBS talk show where he just sits with somebody, you know, and makes it not funny. You know, I don't know.
I mean, I got to wonder too, this is a guy whose master's thesis was on the relationship between Jews and blacks. And the kind of a shared experience and simpatico there. He's tremendously intelligent, very, very thoughtful. And there's a shyness there at the same time, which is why getting in the skin of these other characters, I mean, come on, Matt, when they go and open the box and it's the Borat suit, the shtick with the Borat suit always having been, he never takes it off and it smells terrible. And the people who have interacted with him buy into him being a foreign journalist because he smells bad. And this unwashed suit, you know, it's kind of a reverse Superman, if you will. And then to end the film with, to me, what was the laugh out loud sequence of the first one, you know, mirroring the running of the bulls, and to do it with Trump and Karen and Fauci and the way that, you know, green whatever is coming out of their nose. It's just, I couldn't breathe the other night. And I don't want it to make it sound like I'm lampooning. I mean, that's the one thing that they don't really get into, the racial justice angle, you know, that's been so prevalent this year, because I think it's something he internalizes so much that he wouldn't want to send up. I mean, how easy would it have been for Borat to go out and protest at a Black Lives Matter, or, you know, at a protest in response of that? And there, again, I think that points to the restraint that you mentioned before.
Yeah, Borat is always on the, I was going to say the right side. I don't want to assign rightness or wrongness, but he's always on the side of the issue that obviously Baron Cohen wants him to be. And again, maybe that's an understatement because Borat is being performed, but it's like there is this careful curation so that Borat genuinely and sweetly believes the things that he believes. And of course, that's part of the conceit. That's part of the humorous conceit there, because, you know, dare say he's shining a light on people who don't, presumably, hopefully, don't sweetly have their prejudices. It's kind of with a malice that they have their prejudices. So it's this, for as broad as Borat is, it's this fine tuning on the, certainly on the release of the character, and also on, you know, of course, it's all in the edit in terms of, you know, what makes it and what doesn't. That's true for any story, but particularly with this, where there just must have been, you know, well, that's too mean, or that's too sweet, or that's not believable enough, whatever it might be. Well, Pete, as we start to wrap things up here, a busy but fun week ahead of us, certainly. We're going to be previewing season 2 of The Mandalorian tomorrow. That'll be for Mandalorian Monday. And indeed, Pete, probably Mondays or Sunday nights or overnight, but probably Mondays is when we will be releasing our Mandalorian podcasts. So that's kind of some synergy there. Then, of course, a new episode of Discovery later in the week, and then the premiere of Mandalorian on Friday. So podcasting both of those shows next Saturday and Sunday to take us into November as day by day, week by week, we claw our way out of 2020 and into maybe a better world.
Yes, and helping us get there and through it all, Matt, are our patrons on patreon.com/fantasticgeek.
Yes, keeping us listener-supported, keeping us just floating along here as we really, we really start to race into some busy, fun times for the podcast, you know, doing Discovery and Mandalorian back-to-back. Widely assumed that WandaVision will be starting the week after Mandalorian concludes.
Christmas Day.
Christmas Day, indeed. So just doing two shows at a time until the end of January or so, all part of that fun. And those people who support us on patreon.com/fantasticgeek, keeping the wind in our sails.
Everybody who contributes gets access to exclusive podcast content, all sorts of stuff behind the wall there. Can't contribute right now. We certainly understand. You could help us out by going over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating, take seconds, leave us a review. It takes a little longer, but all of those actions help us equally.
Pete, as people want to chime in about Borat, about Disco, about Mando, about WandaVision, how can people be
Wando.
In touch? There we go. Wando, Disco, Mando. How can people be in touch with you on Twitter?
You find me on Twitter at Peter, PIETERJKETELAR, KETELAAR, 11,649 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter, as Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek, all one word, with the P and the H, like it today.
As mentioned before, we'll be back on Mandalorian Monday, Mando Monday, as the cool kids call it, to talk about that. And then keeping things squarely outside of the real world, or real in quotes, that Borat explores, and firmly in the world of sci-fi fantasy as we get our escapism. But for now, Pete, I will say adios to all our listeners and give you the final word.
Wah-wah-wee.
Yek-shemesh.